Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the world's aquifers and groundwater right after this. You know, with an income of $50,000 a year, you're paying $7,650 in Social Security taxes. Well, that's if you're self-employed and you're paying 15.3%. Well, then, shouldn't you subtract that $7,650 that you just paid for Social Security from your $50,000 income, and then pay your income tax on the $42,350 balance instead of paying 17% of that $50,000 twice? Now, you and I both know the IRS makes you pay 15.3% of the $50,000 in Social Security tax. Then they make you pay 17% of the $50,000 in income tax. Well, that means that you paid 17% of the $7,650 twice. Now, that little bookkeeping trick steals an extra $1,300 from you and everybody else that pays that tax. Now, what would you think if Sears, Penny's, or your credit card company charged you twice, like Social Security and the IRS does? I thought you'd think that was just real special. Now, for more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, area code 417-273-4967. And while you're at it, be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law school that's entertaining, educational, informative, and then best of all, it's free of charge. Tax and status is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Do it right now before you forget. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about this thing of groundwater, and I said, at the time, last time, I said, this is a problem that would take God Almighty himself at least 5 minutes to figure out. But for poor mortals like us, we've got an insoluble problem. This little country over here called Bangladesh has 140 million people. They get 70% of their water out of the ground, out of the aquifers, out of the groundwater. And get this, 70% of their agriculture is based upon this groundwater. What happens when the groundwater runs out? What happens when they're drawing more water out of the aquifer than the aquifer can recharge? It means that their agriculture collapses, or a part of their agriculture collapses, and the poor guys are just living hand to mouth to start with. There's more to the story. The health problem seemed to be solved. But by 1985, the people were beginning to be diagnosed with arsenic poisoning. Arsenic is a slow killer, and the signs of poisoning are blisters on the palms of their hands and soles of their feet, which eventually become gangrenous and cancerous, and almost all of the wells had traces of arsenic. This means that virtually the entire population is now exposed to some degree of arsenic poisoning, and almost every one of the 68,000 villages in Bangladesh is now at risk. Now remember, it was the United Nations that came in there and said, hey, we're going to solve your problem for you. We're just here to help. Well, corrective action is slow. The population has now been alerted to the problem, and the authorities are trying to identify the most contaminated wells. But there are about 12 million wells, and testing all of these wells will take decades. But the situation is actually much worse than that. Further testing has shown that arsenic is not the only toxic metal in their groundwater. It's just that arsenic poisoning was the first to be revealed in patients. Now, there are also unsafe levels of manganese, lead, nickel, and chromium, and now it's been discovered that a proportion of wells also exceed World Health Organization limits for uranium. An entire population of over 140 million people is slowly being poisoned in Bangladesh, and it is time for effective action. Well, in June of 2004, the board of the World Bank provided a grant of $40 million to the government of Bangladesh to expand the provision of safe drinking water to some rural areas by promotion of piped water supply. But that's a small amount for a task when there are about 100 million rural people at risk. In other words, they're giving about 40 cents per person in round numbers. Hey, with a problem of that size and that magnitude, you'd say, geez, $40 million, that's a lot of money. Yeah, that's a lot of money for Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife. But for a country that's facing this kind of a problem, now this is the direct poisoning in the wells. That's not their real problem. That's a problem for today. It doesn't spell immediate disaster for the nation or death by the tens of millions, but there is a problem that does. But there's more. I recall that in the early days of the United Nations, there was a wonderful spirit of goodwill between nations, and nations were prepared to give generously to support worthy projects. The gifts were often support in kind, such as construction, plant and equipment, or sending a team of experts, or making donations of food to regions stricken with famine. Well, Bangladesh is in desperate need of international assistance if the problem of arsenic poisoning is to be corrected quickly. At present, there is a tendency for the international community to stand back and to fund studies of the problems rather than intervening directly in solving the problem itself. Have you ever noticed that? Whenever a problem is brought up, Congress appoints a committee to study the problem. It's not for the purposes of solving the problem. It's for the purpose of studying the problem. That gets everybody's attention. And, oh my God, they're going out and they're going to study the problem. And in your mind, you say, oh, well, if they're going to study it, as soon as they get what the problem is, they're going to immediately solve it. No, no, no. Boys and girls, wake up. The Congress, the United Nations, is not there to solve the problem. The United Nations and the Congress is there to study the problem to keep your attention off of it. And the arsenic is the tip of the iceberg. Let me refer you back here to the real paragraph that meant something here. The economic impact of the mass introduction of groundwater wells was dramatic. The contribution of groundwater to the total irrigated area increased from 4% in 1971 to 70% in 1999. Some 12 million wells were installed. Employment and output in agriculture increased. Poverty was reduced. The United Nations had saved the children to be destroyed in a massive famine when the agriculture collapses. Oh yeah, they're getting by today, but they're not preparing for tomorrow. And when tomorrow happens, it'll come up upon them like a thief in the dark. Now that's just one more nation. Now we've already covered India, China, Bangladesh, Yemen. I mean, and we've just barely touched the tip of the iceberg. Now, the reason that these foreign nations are so important to Americans is because when famine strikes these nations, one by one, as their agricultural systems collapse, they'll have to go to war to keep people's minds off of the famine. That's what's going on today. See, the real reason for war in Iraq is oil. Not democracy, not regime change, not Saddam Hussein. Hell, you've got worse dictators than Saddam Hussein in Cuba and North Korea. You're not over there making the world safe for democracy in Cuba and North Korea. That's because there's no oil in Cuba or North Korea. Come on, kids, let's wake up and smell the coffee. Same thing is true here. Nobody's telling us about this ticking time bomb of subterranean destruction. And as we destroy these aquifers that we now have built our societies, our civilizations, our infrastructure is based upon irrigation. That's where our food comes from. Half the people in the world, boys and girls, get their water out of these aquifers. Now just imagine what's going to happen as these aquifers begin to collapse one by one over a period of time, slowly but surely. And it'll be reported in the news, and famines will increase, which is precisely what the Messiah told us in Matthew 24. He says, don't be too concerned about that. Famines and earthquakes and disease epidemics, don't let that freak you out. That's the tip of the iceberg. But there's a real bad problem coming, and it's called the Great Tribulation. It can be summed up in World War III. And that's where the world is headed. That's where George Bush and the American government is taking us. And it's not that they're doing it directly or that they're sitting there planning World War III. Events are transpiring. And as these events transpire, we've got to have solutions. Iran developing a nuclear weapon. Bush administration officials say, not on our watch. Uh-oh. Not on our watch. And the Iranians say, what are you going to do about it? And so we're dealing with the immovable object being attacked by the irresistible force. Nobody knows quite how this is going to work out. Now, in the United States, the state governments retain residual responsibilities for such matters as land and water. All of the states in the United States maintain their own legislation on water. And in the case of groundwater, the property owner has an absolute right of capture of the groundwater under his property. This means that the landowner may pump as much water as he wishes without incurring any responsibility if his actions are found to be detrimental to his neighbors or the community as a whole. We practice that here in Missouri. I drilled a well the other day, and I can have all the water I can pump out of it. I don't know how much water is down there. But in legal theory, if I could put a pump in there big enough, I could pump all the water in that aquifer out all by myself. No law against that. I can capture it. The water, when I pump it out of my well, has to run into the void from my neighbor. So Dale Smith is sitting over there, and he bored a hole down to 500 feet, and in legal theory, he can pump all the water out onto his place. I'm just talking about the legal theory now. And you're sitting there saying, well, you stupid nitwit, nobody can pump all the water out. He hasn't got a place to store it. That's true. That's true. But wait a minute. That's me and Dale. Now let's add Don Uchman to the mix. Hey, let's add Steve and John and Bill. And pretty soon you've got hundreds, then thousands, and then millions of wells pumping out of the aquifer. Now, I've already reported to you that's what you've got going on here. Wells in India, 21 to 26 million of them. And they're just drilling more every day. They got drilling rigs out there drilling more. And the carrying capacity of the aquifer can't carry it. And as we drill the wells, we irrigate more corn, more wheat, more beans. And as we irrigate more, we depend more upon the irrigated water. And here's my point. When the water runs out, so does the food. And that's where Revelation 6 comes in. That's where 25% of the world's population dies from hunger. And when 25% of us are dying from hunger, the other three quarters are going to be busily scurrying about, figuring out how they're going to survive a little bit longer. And that's where war comes in. And that's what the book of Revelation is all about, war. We talk about it in terms of World War III. Yeah, yeah. And the war is going to be fought over the dwindling means of survival. And you know, oil is a very important means of survival. It's the energy that we need to drive all those pumps that pump all that water and that deliver all of those goods and services that we all want. Unfortunately, the world's population is growing at such a rate that not everybody in the world can live like an American or a Frenchman or an Englishman. Our standard of living is such that we Americans consume 25 barrels of oil per person per year. In India, it's less than one barrel. In China, I think they're now up to a barrel. Think of that. Wait until the Chinese and the Indians start consuming 25 barrels per person per year. What do you think that's going to do? And you say, oh, well, that can't happen. You're right. That cannot happen. It isn't going to happen. But that doesn't mean that all those people out there don't want it to happen, don't believe that it can happen, or aren't going to do everything in their power to make it happen. You've got it. We Americans have got the oil, and we're not giving it to anybody else. We're not going to share and share alike. And I'm not advocating that. I'm just telling you that the other guys on the other side of the world are sitting there saying, well, wait a minute. Those Americans have got it, and we want it, so let's go take it. There was an old story that came out of the Civil War. President Lincoln had selected Ulysses Grant to head up the Union Army in defeating the Southern Rebellion. And Grant, being what he was, a general, said, ultimately, we're going to win. You see, the Southerners kill two Yankees for every Southerner that a Yankee kills. They're killing us twice as fast as we're killing them. And that means we're going to win. Because we got four times as many people in the North as they have in the South. Boys and girls, those Chinese have four times as many people as we have. If you can kill two Chinamen for every American that they kill, you lose. If you could kill three Chinamen for every American that they kill, you lose. In the final analysis, you lose. Now, if the Indians and the Chinese were to join together, I don't think you even need to get involved in the fight. Because if you do, you have to use nuclear weapons. My goodness, boys and girls, has anybody told you that the Chinese have nuclear weapons? Well, I don't think that they're going to start off by bombing San Francisco. I think they'll start off by taking something, and then we'll respond, and then they'll respond, and we'll respond, and they'll respond, and pretty soon it gets to the point where, well, the only thing left for us, because there's so many of them, to neutralize their numerical superiority is nuclear weapons. And isn't that what Revelation is all about? Isn't that what the Great Tribulation is all about? Which is where the Messiah said, hey, boys and girls, if I don't step in here, in Matthew 24, if I don't step in here and intervene in world affairs and save you from yourselves, you're all going to end up toast. So as a reporter, I thought to myself, what is the catalyst? Irrigated water. You know what we've been saying? We've been saying for the past 100 years, God, stick it where there's no daylight. We don't need your damn rain. We got irrigation. Somebody kept telling us that when it rains, that irrigation sucked out of those aquifers recharges the aquifer. That's what I'd heard. And now we find out that's not true, and the news media is not telling us that either. Do you suppose maybe we're not supposed to know that? Kind of entered my mind. Well, under state environmental laws, now talking about the United States and environmental laws, a state may establish controls to maintain groundwater quality, and that may influence well spacing and disposal of waste into the groundwater. But overall, throughout the United States, the state legislatures treat groundwater as a basic property right, and there's no control over groundwater withdrawal. Because of problems of depletion of groundwater in some basins, many states have established local district conservancy boards, which are self-governing bodies of users of groundwater. These boards are charged with responsibility to deal with all of the property owners in the management of the water resources, and it's hoped that the problems will be solved by mutual agreement. Mutual agreement. Bob, quit pumping so much water out of your well over there. Then some guy wants, George, well, you quit pumping so much water. Wait a minute. I want Bob to conserve, but I don't want George to have to conserve. Bob is sitting over there saying, I want George to conserve, but Bob, I don't want him to have to conserve. And boys and girls, when people have to make these kinds of decisions which affect their own self-interest, you know, just be pragmatic about it. Let's suppose that you got a farm out here in western Kansas, and you irrigate your soybeans or wheat or corn, whatever you're growing out here, and all of a sudden, somebody comes up and says, you know, Bob, you need to conserve water. And you say, well, I don't deny that. But how much water do you want me to conserve? And somebody says, well, we're pumping water out of the aquifer twice as fast as it's recovering. So we want you to voluntarily cut back on your water usage by 50%. And we want everybody in the aquifer to do the same thing. Aren't we in effect saying, Bob, we want you to cut your living standards and your income by 50%? You're going to do that voluntarily. Everybody's going to do that voluntarily. And if you believe that, you should go buy the Brooklyn Bridge. It's on sale cheap. That's going to happen when the snowballs are all melted in hell. That's an impossibility. Now, it is true that somebody somewhere, somehow, has got to get a handle on this, but it's not going to be government. It's not going to be individuals. So it's going to run its course, like everything always does. You know, the lead up to World War II ran its course, and the war occurred. Everybody knew the war was coming. I mean, you had to be kind of blind to figure out, we're going to get through this without any war. You know, the lead up to the Iraq War was pretty ominous, pretty awesome, pretty straightforward. If Saddam Hussein doesn't abdicate peacefully and leave Dodge, we're going to come and get him. He wasn't leaving, and we were coming to get him. You knew it was coming. You didn't have any idea what the long-term ramifications were going to be or what the costs were going to be or how long it was going to be. I don't think any of us could have envisioned what has unfolded. But we all knew it was coming, and we knew it was unavoidable. Now, you'd think if somebody knew that something was coming, they'd do everything they could to avoid it. I can't imagine what's going to happen to the same farmer and all the rest of the farmers around him when the wells simply run dry like mine did. When the water didn't come out the faucet anymore, we woke up one day and said, oh my God, there's no water in the faucet. We have to drill a new well. And I'm sure the people out there, as each well goes dry, will drill deeper and deeper. But in the Ogla Ogla Aquifer, I don't know if there's any water below it. Maybe there is. Maybe there's a second aquifer down there. You just drill down another 1,000 or 2,000 feet, and you got another 50 or 100 years' worth of water. Boy, that'll solve our problems for a while, won't it? Hey, but the hydrologists tell us that that's not true, and that once the Ogla is done, it's done. There isn't any water underneath it to speak of. That's the bad news that none of us wanted to hear. Now, even with the conservancy boards, the consequences has been a disastrous emptying of the nation's groundwater basins. In cases of dispute, the right of unlimited private use of groundwater is defended by the law. And groundwater is the source of drinking water for about one half of the U.S. population, including nearly all of the rural population. The pumps deliver in total about 50 billion U.S. gallons a day, or about 70 cubic kilometers per year. Did you get that? That's 70 cubic kilometers a year. Now, the problem is made worse by a convenient, quaint view in the groundwater profession that the aquifers are being recharged from surface rainfall. And they use dubious mathematical models of groundwater flow to show farmers and cities where to drill more and deeper wells. But inevitably, the new wells cause the water table to drop while the wells decline in flow. So the water table drops. Now, my well is down at 500 feet, and I got 290 feet of water in it, and it flows 52 gallons a minute. Okay? And I'm just one crummy farmer. down here where there aren't very many wells and there aren't very many farmers, and our water table is falling. Now that tells me that Springfield and a bunch of other farmers out there are taking more than their fair share. They're certainly taking more than can be recharged in our aquifer. And I'll just bet you that your aquifer is being drawn down also. And you know, at some point in time, like that bank account, it runs out. Then what are we going to do? And I contend that we need to be thinking about, what are you going to do when no water comes out of the faucet? You better be thinking about that today and tomorrow. Because the reality of it is that the United States is coming to an end of the cowboy era of groundwater exploitation. And it is to be expected that the flow in all basins will gradually decline towards extinction. And the evidence is now clear. There are reduced flows of water to springs, lakes, and streams. And in the natural state, the small residual flow of groundwater came to the surface of springs and has flowed to streams, lakes, and wetlands. With the lowering of the groundwater levels, the associated springs and streams have now ceased to flow. And there is serious subsidence of land in many parts of the United States due to pumping of groundwater. In the area of Houston, Texas, groundwater pumping has led to subsidence at the surface of about 3 meters, together with a lowering of the groundwater level by about 120 meters. Houston, Texas. Houston, Texas. Listen, boys and girls, 120 meters times 39 inches divided by 12, my God, that's 390 feet. I don't know how deep your aquifer is, but you've already used up 390 feet of it, boys and girls. Now, pay attention. Think about that. You got a lot of people down there in Houston. And I want you to notice that it isn't just in India or China or Bangladesh, for crying out loud. It's in Topeka, Kansas, in Houston, Texas, in Los Angeles, Phoenix, and Las Vegas. And let me tell you, boys and girls, we're not in a desert here in Missouri, and it's happening right here in Missouri in the Ozarks, where we get 52 inches of rain a year, or at least that's been the average up until recently. Now, in the desert state of Arizona, there have been water level declines of between 100 and 200 meters over much of the area and associated subsidence of the ground of 5 meters and more. Unequal subsidence and deep land fissures are a serious problem. And the following internet reference is very informative. So if you'll go to ag.arizona.edu, Azwater, A-Z-W-A-T-E-R, Arroyo, A-R-R-O-Y-O, you can probably get some more information. Now remember, I said when we researched the subject out, I said this will boggle your mind. I've got numbers from a number of publications over here that just scare the bejesus out of me. And I've got my well, and I've got my water for the next 30 years, but I can see my well going dry again over the next 30 years. So that says to me that George Gordon has to come up with a problem for this underground water solution. Not talking about polluting the water. That's another subject. You know, up there in Colorado, up around, where was it, Fort Collins, they had some big nuclear test site up there where they have polluted the groundwater underneath your Fort Collins area. I don't remember the name of this outfit up there, but hell, they were making atomic bombs up there. I remember that. And all of this nuclear waste now is leached down into the aquifer, and the aquifer now is dead. It's not fit to drink. I don't know if you people are drinking that water or not. Maybe you are. And if you're getting cancer and other diseases up there, that ought to tell you a little bit of the story. Fortunately, down here in the Ozarks, our aquifer is still clean. It's just declining. More and more people need more and more water. I can't begrudge my neighbor over here for drilling a well and pumping water out to water his stock any more than my neighbor should begrudge me pumping water out of the ground to water my stock, and everybody else around me over here is doing the same thing. Unfortunately for all of us, we're all in this boat together, boys and girls. the aquifer beneath our feet is going down every year. Where we used to have water at 40 feet in abundance, we now don't even have water at 300 feet. But we do have water in abundance at 500, but that'll get pumped out just like we pumped out the aquifers above it. Then what are we going to do? You know, the ultimate answer to this has to be, we can never use any more water than falls on our land in the form of rain. And that's why rain in due season is so important. And if there is a God, and if he says, I can withhold the rain, that's a guy that we need to get on the right side of and in short order. Because we've been giving this guy the finger, and he's been withholding the rain, and we're running out of underground water. Now, he's kind of leaning on us at this point in time. Wake up, boys and girls, because if you don't wake up, it's going to hurt real bad. Hang on a second. I got to give you this reminder. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Remember, The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the law school conducts or offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Now, to order yours, all you have to do is call the law school and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. That's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications so endorsed or recommended are going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed in total by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967, talking about underground water. The underground water is not being recharged at the rate that we're pumping it out of the ground. 40% of American agriculture depends upon irrigation. That does not mean that on December the 17th, 2016, all of the water in America is going to be shut off. In the Oglala Aquifer, it's being shut off at the rate of 6% a year. A vast area of the panhandle of Texas has now reverted to dry land farming. They were irrigating, they ran out of water, and now they're back to square one. The dust blows. Then that's where we're headed. The productivity is going to be cut sharply when we go from 100 to 200 bushels to the acre to 30 or 60 bushels to the acre. The time to plan for that event is right now. the time to plan for how much hay you're going to feed next winter is right now. In Texas and Arizona, there are proposals to privatize the groundwater aquifers. This would absolve governments from the responsibility for management of groundwater and then leave the matter to the private sector and the people to sort out. This seems a dangerous proposal in a country where citizens may own guns. Virtually all of the drinking water in Florida is supplied from groundwater. The Florida aquifer system extends across the entire state of Florida. Southern Georgia and adjoining parts of Alabama and South Carolina, a major concern is the increasing contamination of the aquifer system as the water levels decline, and there is intrusion of seawater into the aquifers along the East Coast and on the South Coast along the Gulf of Mexico. In Kansas, groundwater accounts for 90% of the total supply of water, and it is the principal source for 600 public water supply systems. 600 cities and towns in Kansas get their water exclusively from groundwater, and most rural domestic supply. Most of the groundwater is used for irrigation. Groundwater levels have dropped substantially in some areas by more than 200 feet, and there are many similar examples in other states. How's that make you feel? Subsidence of lands due to groundwater extraction is a serious problem in several states of the United States. Differential settlement, sometimes with cracking on the ground surface and sinkholes, can cause serious damage in built-up areas. And throughout the United States, the common law right of capture of groundwater is firmly entrenched in the minds of the people and in legislation. Landowners protect their claim to capture by pumping the water. Consequently, there has been a race to the pump house. Now the race is now ending. From now on, water supply will become a far more important issue for farms, cities, and states, and water supply for cities will become more expensive, and there will be pressure for transfer of water across state boundaries. The rapid decline of groundwater resources in China and India has led to the governments of those countries moving to construct huge projects for the transfer of water to their cities and farms. Similar actions may be needed in the United States. But instead of massive action in the United States to move groundwater that's above ground to where it's needed, we're talking about tearing out the six major dams on the Columbia River and the Hetchy Hetchy Dam, which is a small dam in California, which is one of hundreds of dams that is used for municipal water supply. I don't know, boys and girls, it sounds like we've got our heads up the wrong end, doesn't it? Now, Libya, they have a man-made river. Listen to this story. This is the way they deal with it in the desert country of Libya. Back in the 1960s, during the exploration for oil in the desert in Libya, vast, deep reservoirs of groundwater were discovered. Four major underground basins have subsequently been identified, and they are estimated to contain over 35,000 cubic kilometers of water. Let me put that in perspective. The world uses about 1,000 cubic kilometers of water per year worldwide. The Libyans have so much water out there in their desert, underground water, they could supply all of the water use in the world for 35 years all by themselves. I don't think that the Libyans are going to run out of groundwater over the next 10, 20, or 30 years. However, if the estimates turn out to be close, the groundwater is recognized to be fossil groundwater, and there will be no effective recharge as the resource is being exploited. So these underground rivers, not rivers, but reservoirs, these huge lakes of water, contain 35,000. That's about 17 or 18,000 cubic miles of water. My God, what a bunch. Under Libya, one country in North Africa. And they're going to exploit that resource. In 1983, the Libyan government created an authority to plan and build a great project to take water from the aquifers in the desert in the south to the coastal plain, which is along the Mediterranean Sea, for irrigation and water supply. This project involves 270 deep wells and 4,000 kilometers of large diameter pipe over 4 meters in diameter, all buried under the desert sand. Oh my God. Let's see how big this thing is. 4 meters. Well, it's 39 inches times 4 divided by 12. And these pipes are 13 feet in diameter. There's 4 of them. 13 feet in diameter. Can you believe that? They're going to fill those pipes up, and they're going to ship that water. They're going to pump that water up to the seacoast. Now, that takes a lot of energy, and it costs a lot of money, and it's something that they can do. They've got the oil, they've got the energy, and they've got the water. And I'm happy for them. But those aquifers do not recharge, and when they run out, it's gone forever. Now watch what happens here. They carry out this plan, and they build cities dependent upon and build cities around the delivery of this water out of the desert. They build farms, and they build infrastructure and factories dependent upon this water that comes out of the desert. Then one day, the water runs out. You know, it's kind of like building a ship on the Aral Sea, and then the sea goes dry and your ship is left stranded on high land. There's ships all over. Now you can see pictures of the Aral Sea, and they've got big fishing trawlers that used to run up and down the Aral Sea fishing that are beached on the land miles from the water because the Aral Sea is slowly drying up. Now, I heard about that years ago, but it never registered with me that the Russians, back in the 1930s, started taking the water out of the rivers that supplied the Aral Sea. It's a landlocked sea or an ocean or a body of water, a great lake like Lake Superior, etc. And the water runs into the lake, and then it evaporates out. So they started using the water out of these rivers, and then ultimately they took all the water out of the rivers, and then ultimately no water got into the Aral Sea. I say no water, at least less water than is being evaporated, and so the sea for the last 40 years has been going dry. It's been evaporating. It's been disappearing. Boys and girls, take a look at a map. The Aral Sea is not a small body of water. Can you imagine Lake Superior drying up? Can you imagine the Great Lakes of the United States drying up? Now, we've had some droughts, and the water levels in the lakes have been low over the last several years. Nobody has talked seriously about them drying up. We're not taking that much, but we're in the process of trying real hard. Now, there is a solution to this problem. Let me just broach it here momentarily. Down in Australia, I picked up a book here some years back on living out in the desert. See, they got a lot of desert land down in Australia. Some of it's tropics, but most of Australia is out there in the desert. And then how do those people subsist or survive out in the desert where it only rains 10 inches a year? And they built some big sheep stations out there. Here in this country, we call them ranches or cattle operations. Over there, they call them stations, where they're raising thousands and thousands of sheep. Not so many cows, but lots of sheep. How do they water them? Well, I suppose today they probably are tapping into groundwater, but in years past, they were pretty crafty people. They had feed out in the desert. You know, you get out into the desert and you say, well, gee, there's nothing for cattle to eat. No, there's lots out there to eat. It's just that it doesn't grow as fast. So in the desert regions, you put a cow to the section. Here where I'm at, it's a cow on 3 acres. 3 acres of land here will support a cow year-round. there's that much grass. There are places that I have observed and worked on that would support one cow to the acre. Old Joe Toasty used to milk 40 cows on 40 acres and made all of his own hay. Joe Toasty, Eel River Valley. And he didn't have the best place east either. Some of it was up on the hillside. It wasn't, the whole 40 acres was not bottomland. That was another surprising part. But it was very productive land. He could get a lot of grass off of it, a lot of clover, a lot of hay. 40 cows, 40 acres. Very unusual. Not impossible, but very unusual. Now, out in Nevada, I was talking to a student out there. He has a ranch, and they have, my God, I forgot the size. I think it's 11,000 sections. It's bigger than the state of Rhode Island, this ranch, if you can believe that. Bigger than the state of Rhode Island. In fact, as I recall, it's almost as big as the state of Delaware. One ranch. Well, anyway, they don't have a lot of grass. They've got a lot of feed out there on a section, on a square mile of land. They've got a lot of feed. And it'll feed, you know, where there's water to drink. Cows have to have water to drink. They can range out for, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 miles from the water hole. And they talk about cow-calf units per section out there. Can you believe that? My God, if I owned a section of land here, I'd be rich. Out there, you've got to have lots of sections to graze cattle on. So there's feed out there. But now they're starting to drill wells where in the past they took the water that was milt water off the mountains or out of the streams that came down out of the mountains or out of the springs. Now they're drilling wells. But get this. Before they drilled wells, they lived out there and they used cisterns. They used water conservation. For instance, down in Australia, there was a guy there had a house and they put gutters up around the house. And when it rained, they collected the water off of the house. So if you've got 6,000 square feet of roof and it rains 1 inch on that 6,000 square feet, then you've got 6,000 square feet of water 1 inch deep, don't you? What do they do with the water? They run that water down through the gutters and they have big underground cement or concrete tanks. Or they'll build open ponds. And they run that water into those ponds. And then they use that water out of those ponds. And then they water their stock. Or they water their gardens. Or they will plant trees and vegetation around the banks of the pond so that the pond waters those plants. It's kind of like an oasis. Out in the desert in the Middle East, you know, they have these oases. Those are natural springs or artesian wells where the water comes to the surface and there's date trees and there's food there. There's life where there's water. But you have to husband it very carefully. Now, what we've been doing is we say, well, gee, look at all this water. Look at this oasis. Gee, if we could exploit the water that's providing, we'll mine it and we'll plant 2, 5, 10, 15, 20 square miles and we'll water it out of the ground. There's our problem. Our infrastructure now around the world, not in America per se, not in Australia, China, or India per se, but around the world. Half the world, boys and girls, get the number. Get it straight. Half the world lives off of the groundwater, which is depleting. Boys and girls, that half living on that groundwater that is being depleted, when it is depleted, they are going to say to the rest of you people in the world that are living on the surface water, give us your water. And what are you going to say? Oh, gosh, you ran out of water? Yes, let us give you half of our water. So that we can share and share alike. Well, it hasn't worked so far, and human nature being what it is, I kind of find it hard to believe that the people here in the East are going to build big pipelines and pump water out to the west at our expense, you Westerners. I just kind of find that hard to believe. That may be what you people out there in the West have in mind. But I'll just bet you that us Midwesterners and Easterners out here that are sitting on our water are going to say, oh, no, you don't. Not by the hair on my chinny chin chin. And they say, there's an old adage that says, whiskey is for drinking. Water is for fighting. And boy, people, when it comes to water, I bet there's been more blood spilled over water than over whiskey. Now keep in mind that they want to build a project to take water from the aquifers in the desert in the south. And we're talking about Libya to the coastal plain along the Mediterranean Sea for irrigation and public water supply. The project involves 270 deep wells, 4,000 kilometers, that's about 2,000 miles, of large diameter 13-foot pipes, more than 4 meters in diameter. They're going to bury it all under the sand. This entire project is a $27 billion project funded entirely by the Libyan government from its oil revenues. So they're going to sell the oil to you Californians, and then they're going to take the money and build this huge project. God bless them. But the ultimate end of it is, when the water runs out, then what? The project is described as the Great Man-Made River Project. By 1996, a key stage of the project was reached when water was delivered to Tripoli, the capital of Libya. Libya covers a large area, but the population is little more than 5 million. And the construction of this project, funded entirely without overseas borrowing, is a most remarkable achievement. It's one of the largest construction projects ever undertaken. It was intended that the project would make Libya self-sufficient in food. Libya imports about 75% of its food. Irrigated farmlands are now being developed along the coast towards this purpose of self-sufficiency. But self-sufficiency in most foods may not be the most efficient and economical way for Libya to use these abundant new resources of groundwater. For example, it may be a great waste of water for Libya to grow cereals such as wheat, barley, and rice. These crops have high water demands and are best grown in areas of sufficient natural rainfall. There may be a far higher financial return and far more employment if Libya uses its land, sunshine, and high-value water to grow higher-value crops for export to world markets, such as fruits and vegetables, and to support new industries based upon these high-intensity or high-profit crops. Now, a brief review of other nations. Yemen is a rocky, barren country with very little arable land and a population of 20 million people. Groundwater was developed in the last few decades to provide water for urban areas and for limited agriculture. The water table is now falling at 2 meters every year in the agricultural areas. The capital is called Sana'a, and its groundwater level has been falling 6 meters a year. This presents a very serious problem, as there are no other supplies of groundwater and virtually no supplies of fresh surface water. How's that for a problem? Iran. It's a rocky country with limited areas of soil suitable for agriculture. They've got a population of 69 million. And Iran is facing an acute water shortage. In eastern Iran, that's out towards the Afghan border, villagers are leaving the region as the wells run dry. It has been reported in the fertile plain in the northeast that the water table has been falling by 2 to 3 meters every year. There's more. Mexico. There are serious problems of water supply in our next door neighbor and in some states and in several cities. Hang on. Get rid of that static. Mexico has a population of 105 million people. They're growing by about 2 million people a year. Well, Jesus, over the next 50 years, at 2 million a year, 100 million, isn't that going to be 200 million? Aren't they going to need twice as much water? You know, my common sense says that if the Mexicans are short of water today, and their population's going to double over the next 50 years. It's actually less than that. It's only about 30. It's going to double. But give them 50 years. Hey, boys and girls, you know, 50 years comes and goes. What are they going to do in the year 2050 if they haven't got enough water today? If you can't live on your present income, how are you going to live when your payments double? That's where we are economically. That's why I said, you know, I think even God Almighty himself might take 5 minutes to solve this problem. There aren't any solutions on planet Earth. There's going to be survivors and there are going to be some victims. Now, if you're going to be one of the survivors, you're going to have to start taking action. Not everybody in the world's going to run out of water. But some people in the world are going to run out of water, and those people are going to be looking real hard for more water, and they're going to be looking real hard at people who've got it. My common sense says you need to have the water, and you want to have the water that isn't very visible. You better be someplace where a lot of those people aren't going to be. Now, in times past, we have been able to live on planet Earth in desert regions by utilizing the water that falls on those regions. There's enough water in Arizona at 10 inches. There's 100,000 square miles of real estate in Arizona. Picture that, 100,000 square miles. When it rains 10 inches on one square mile, or 12 inches, that's an acre foot. 12 inches, it rains 12 inches all over Arizona. Some areas it's less than that, but much of it, it's got 12 inches. I don't know what their average is, but if it's 12 inches, which is arid, on one square mile, it's 640 acre feet. You take 640 times 100,000 square miles. There's more than enough water in Arizona that falls as natural precipitation on the state of Arizona for all of the needs for the people in Arizona. The problem is that they're not relying upon rainwater. They're relying upon groundwater and water from the Colorado River. And boys and girls, both of those sources are going to run out. And I have never heard anybody advance the idea that we should live on and live within our income. We should live on our rainfall and within the rainfall that falls on our land. Now, I proposed that the other day. I said, here on my farm, I need to live on the rainfall that falls here. It rains 52 inches a year. We have not relied upon our rainfall here. We rely upon groundwater, which is a depleting resource. We're not short of water in Missouri. I'm not short of water here. I'm short of the capacity to use the water that I already possess, that I've already got. That's what has to be changed. We need a solution. We need somebody that can think, for crying out loud. And we're not thinking very well here in the United States. At least we haven't been. Well, we'll take this up right there. We need to talk about solutions, and we'll be talking about that as we progress along. It isn't an insoluble problem, but it's going to be real insoluble real fast if we don't take action right now. Okay, you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Well, we're out of time. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening and good night, friends.